PhD is short for Doctor of Philosophy. This podcast shares tips of real-life doctoral students who will eventually defend a dissertation at the end of their academic journey. In this special edition of PhD Tips, we are joined by a special guest who will share their wisdom and five tips for students looking to successfully complete a PhD. If you have been following the ride, thank you for tuning back in. And if you are new, welcome to PhD Tips. Dr. Kimberly Douglas is the president and CEO of Remote Learning Solutions. She helps first-generation PhDs leverage their skills and expertise to build their own coaching enterprises. She helps her clients create services and digital products that earn income independent of an institution. Dr. Douglas increases the bargaining power of faculty and other PhD professionals and creates space for them to grow their vision. She gets results in these areas by shifting self-defeating mindsets, which show up in highly skilled PhDs who have been devalued by institutions and society at large. Dr. Douglas worked in higher education for over 17 years as staff, faculty, and administration. She earned a PhD in political science in 2009. She tenured in information sciences in 2016 at the University of Tennessee at Knoxville. Her teaching and scholarship have developed at the intersection of information science and political behavior. Please help me in welcoming Dr. Kimberly Douglas.
All right, we're live. So thank you. Welcome Dr. Kimberly Douglas to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm so happy that you're here. And reading your bio, you know, I want you to like advise me as I work my way through.
Okay.
It's really, you know, your bio is really fun. So in the pre-record, I'm going to read your bio so everyone is going to know, you know, what you're about, where you come from, and
okay,
what you're doing. But I like to allow you to do that too, mm-hmm. Because you probably will say more than just what is on the bio that you sent me. So,
sure.
You know, if you could just, you know, share how you're doing, where you work, and, you know, general icebreaker.
Sure. Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me on the program. This is really exciting, and I'm really excited about the work that you're doing. So thank you for, this is a service to the community. So thank you. Mm-hmm. So I own a company, it's called Remote Learning Solutions. And what I do in my work is I support first generation PhDs. And well, I say support, but my formula is SIA formula, S-I-A, which is support, information, and accountability. And what I do in my work is I show PhDs how to leverage their skills and expertise to earn passive income. And that is really important to me because of things that are happening, the shifts that are happening in higher education. But just B, I want to change the dynamics between faculty, the dynamics that faculty and adjuncts have with universities. And so we go to school for 20 plus years and get out and beg for jobs because it is a buyer's market. And so a lot of people end up trying to piece together a life by holding all these adjunct positions. And if that's what you like to do, that's great. Fine, wonderful. I don't think most people like doing that. And I believe that when you have to do that, you don't bring your best to the table. And I feel like when you have to piece together something and you're still justifying your skills and your expertise, I think you bring less of yourself to the table. I believe that most people go into a PhD program with a vision in their head of what that PhD will allow them to do. That's what I want to do. I want to work with that person to realize that vision. What that turns into for me is I work with people to develop content, all kinds of digital content, which we can get into later, as a way of, so digital content as well as services in which they can coach adult learners outside of institutions. So if you think about all the content, so if you were to go through everything you did peer-to-peer today, so all your text messages, mm-hmm. all your emails, correspondence, responding to a blog, mm-hmm. it's just amazing how much content we generate. And people who work in academia absolutely create a lot of content that they could keep for yeah. themselves that is not going to be owned by a university or by a publisher. And so I encourage people to really look at the breadth of what you bring to the table, because it is quite a bit. And people who get PhDs are amazing people. However they got through their program, there's something special about them. So that is the work that I'm doing. So just as a kind of a reflection, so I have over 17 years of experience in higher education. I've been a staff member, faculty member. I've been a visiting professor, and then I've been a tenured professor. And I decided this year that I wanted to walk away to pursue my own business full time and really devote my attention to it, because I see this need. And also for me, I knew that working for someone else would never be enough. And mm-hmm. so that's how I got here.
That's dope. Yeah. I read this meme. I think it was on Twitter. It was like, you know, your boss will never pay you enough to live across the street from her or him.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. No, they won't. No. No, that's a perfect meme.
I was like, yeah, that's probably true. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. So thank you for that open. And so, like, as you alluded, and, if, you know, as people listen to this podcast, they know that this podcast is, I hope it becomes a sort of North Star for mm-hmm. the culture. And so that, you know, PhD students of color looking to do a PhD program mm-hmm. or already in one can get some insights about, sure. you know, how to be successful. So, mm-hmm. you know, you being here is absolutely magnificent. So I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. And so another piece of that is, so one of the reasons why I created this podcast was when I was applying to be to my program that I'm in now, the PhD status seemed so legendary, so iconic, mm-hmm. so out of reach. But as I'm in it, I'm like, I'm a regular person still.
Yeah.
So for the guests I like to have on the show, I like them to answer the question about what's their academic journey. You know, and you can go as far back as you want. You can start in kindergarten if you want mm-hmm. to. Which led you to this point that you're at right now?
Okay, so I will start with the third grade. So nice. I had a toy chest, and the toy chest had a chalkboard on it. And what I used to do is line up my stuffed animals and dolls, and I would teach to them. Now, granted, well, I'll say this. So I would name them the names of people who were in my class. Mm. Now, that meant that some of them got abused because there were some people in the class I didn't like. So let's just be honest about that. So at a very early age, I was a pedagogical kind of person. I liked the living in the world of ideas. I also came from a traumatic background, which I think that shows up more often than we're willing to admit. Mm-hmm. And is often intertwined with our achievement and performance. And so I always knew that there was something, because I read a lot, I always knew that there was something bigger waiting on me. I didn't know mm-hmm. what it was. And I knew, so as time went on, you know, I became more of this kind of person where I like quotes and I like reading and very scholarly kinds of things, as well as ratchet things, but scholarly kinds of things. And I didn't know that I wanted to be a professor per se. But as time went on and I got more educated, I started to see how I could fit into that role. But it wasn't until after I had gotten a master's degree and was working that I really start. So I'm this kind of person, and this is what I do for the people I work with. I'm really good at seeing patterns and putting and creating dots to make a picture and connecting the dots for people. So mm-hmm. that's what I had to do for myself. I had to connect the dots. And a lot of dots have been connected up to the point where I got a master's degree, and I got my master's degree and my undergraduate degree from Tennessee State University. But once I started working and I started to get some experiences that I wouldn't have, that I just didn't have growing up. And I worked for the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation as a policy analyst. And I started working with professors on projects, environmental projects. And there was a sociology professor who talked to me about getting a PhD. Now, go back about 10 years. I remember writing in my notebooks, Kimberly Douglas, PhD. And I knew something in me knew that I wanted to achieve that goal or reach that goal, but I didn't have all the dots. So once I met him and then I started talking to people at University of Tennessee Knoxville, which is where he worked, mm-hmm. things started coming together. And one thing after another, and then I retook the GRE, and then I got a teaching assistant, or I was offered a research assistantship, and then it became like it had to happen. It just had to happen. Mm-hmm. But I had to get those dots in place to really understand what it meant to get a PhD and what it would allow me to do. And just as a word of advice for people who are listening, yes, the achievement is great. That's wonderful. And that alone will open a lot of doors for you. But what is most important is that you have some idea of what you think this degree can do for you. You don't have to have it mapped out perfectly, because that's part of why you're going to school, is to figure that out. But you do need to have some guide or some, even if it's a fuzzy picture, of what you're trying to do with the degree, because that will determine what you put on your application and how you talk mm-hmm. about the degree, or how yeah. you talk about yourself as a prospective student mm-hmm. and the narrative that you put together about yourself. So that's the Cliff's Notes version, if your audience knows what Cliff's Notes are. No pun intended. That is the shortened version of, you know, my journey to mm-hmm. the PhD. It really is about putting the dots together. But yeah. it's what's most important is that all along the way, you see yourself as bigger than a student or bigger than an academic. You are so much more than any of those roles. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where some students get caught up. And I remember feeling like this, especially when you get to the dissertation part. That's an opportunity for you to think of yourself in a very different way. And the way that you have to think of yourself and moving from being a student to being a professional or being more of a professional is you have to really put the coursework behind you. That's a box mm-hmm. and that's a set of skills mm-hmm. that you needed for that. But now you need a whole new set of skills, right? And that, yeah. and that's something people don't tell you. At each step of the journey, you need a different skill set. And sometimes you need a different skill set within the same process. So by the time you get to the dissertation, you have to be thinking about yourself in a very different way. You're no longer a student. You have to think of yourself as a capable, able-bodied professional. Mm-hmm. And that makes all the difference. And that's one of those things that can hold you up. But so obviously I got past that. I will say going through my program, it took me a while to get out because I changed advisors 3 times. Mm-hmm. And the first time I had the advisor, she left and we weren't enough along for her to commit to working with me. And I was still developing my ideas. The second person had moved into the department head position from a research center. Now, here's a question that I should have asked him that I did not know to ask at the time. Have you ever directed a dissertation? Did not ask that question. He's the department head, so I'm assuming he knows what he's doing. He didn't know how to direct a dissertation. He just didn't. That's not a criticism. It's not whatever. It is just facts. So yeah. I kind of floundered for about a year and a half with that process. And finally, we just walked away from him and not sure what I was going to do. There was a person who had told me previously who branded himself as kind of a Marxist person, communitarian. And so he would always say, you know, if you ever need anything, please don't hesitate to come to me. So I went to him. Yeah. And after the second time I met with him and he told me that, so the first time he had said some stuff that it was like, huh, that's interesting, because I kept trying to engage him in a conversation about where I was going, because I had to start all over. I kept trying to engage him in a conversation, and at every turn, there was a roadblock. And so I won't go into the details of that, but I will tell you what happened in the second meeting. Uh-huh. In the second meeting, I was expressing my ideas and where I wanted to go, and he just sat back, and he looked at me. He said, Kimberly, I don't know how you're going to finish this degree. You're married, you have a child. So I started packing my bleep up.
He's an enemy of progress.
I started packing my stuff up. Cause see, what I still believe is that he wanted to appear to be a nice guy, and he didn't want to tell me that he didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. So that's when you have to understand your own self-worth. Mm-hmm. And you have to realize when people are not helping you further your goal. Mm-hmm. He wasn't helping me further my goal. So I just started, he kept talking. I started packing my stuff up. And I knew at that moment that I would never be back in his office. Yeah. And I never went back to his office because he was wasting my time. Yeah. And so what I did, I kind of really hit a wall, because people in the department believed that I had done something wrong because they didn't want to step up. I called all over the country looking for people to help me. And then I finally went to the Dean of Graduate Studies, and she told them, you know what? Y'all need to take care of this. And so I did. Finally, a person stepped up, you know, and like you said, because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. And even as we were working together, I could see him side-eyeing me, thinking that I had done something wrong to make these people not want to work with me. So once we sat down, we talked, he told me what he thought I should do. I went away, I did it, and I came back. He told me something else. I went away, I did it, I came back. Because I already had material. And I had material because I had all these starts and stops. And he was really shocked at how quickly I got it done once I really started working on my project and had guidance on my project. He was shocked. He admitted to me, he said, I really was hesitant and wasn't sure how you would do. And I was like, but you know, that's his problem. That's not my problem. Yeah. That his colleagues didn't do what they were supposed to do, and he had to come clean it up. So some way he was trying to make it still be my fault. Mm-hmm. But whatever.
I think I was maybe watching a show, and she was studying medicine though. And oh no, actually it was my last podcast, actually. Uh-huh. Ophelia Oko. Mm-hmm. She was talking about how, I don't know if it was one of her advisors or someone she was interviewing with. And he was basically saying, all right, if you're looking to become a doctor and, you know, in medicine, you know, you're not going to have family. You're not going to have kids. Right. You're not going to.
Right.
I was like, what? Is this what people say? Like, what's going on?
Yes.
So like, it wasn't that long ago. Yeah. Your story, I think, will show people that if you stand your ground and you know your self-worth, you're going to continue.
Right.
And you can't let nobody, you know, stop you.
Well, you know, I think most from what I know, and I went through one PhD program, but I've talked to other people. It sounds like a lot of them are very traumatic for people, especially people mm-hmm. of color.
Yeah.
And you have to have your own compass.
Mm-hmm.
So you hear this word gaslighting thrown around quite a bit lately because it's appropriate. That's why it's being thrown around, because we recognize that this happens on a daily basis. And that experience was nothing short of gaslighting. And you know, whatever it says about the department, I don't really care about that. But I do care about telling my own story, which is why I'm here. And I felt gaslighted now looking back on it and seeing how it was a situation where I couldn't be right. And so if you can't be right, then you don't know how to move on. And I finally got help in moving on. But my point is, you really have to have your own compass. Mm. You have to understand who you are. I think it's really important for PhD students, especially Black students, to see a therapy while you're in your PhD, see a therapist while you're in your PhD program. Mm. A therapist, a coach, somebody. Because you expect, if you haven't grown up in a household where you are around other PhDs, and that's not to say that some people don't go in and they have a really positive experience, and you know, because I can't account for everybody. But there is a cultural thing, and what I mean by culture, I'm talking about like work culture, where you hear about certain things that happen in a workplace. If your father's a chemist, you understand what happens in the chemistry lab. But if you didn't have that, you don't really know what is reasonable and what's not. And so you, I didn't know what was reasonable or not. And it's helpful to have people who've been through the experience who are saying, you know what, that doesn't smell right, or that's okay. You know, just try to work past it. You need a compass. And specifically, I think you need a mental health compass.
Yeah, I never heard that before. I had a healthcare professional in training on, and he was talking about how trying to find a Black therapist is like trying to find dinosaurs in his area.
Right. Yes. Yes.
So that's like key information, and I'm hoping to find like a network of what you're saying, therapists for or advisors in that way.
Mm-hmm.
For mm-hmm. is important.
I think the group that we met through, there are some coaches, and of course I'm a coach myself. But there are some coaches in and my point in saying that is to make sure people get support. But there are coaches in the group, I think, that you and I met and lots of other coaches. And I can refer people to coaches as well, because you need that guidance, and your mentor can't do all that for you. It's just not possible. That's not the role of a mentor. They can help you with some things, but they can't, you know, give you that type of guidance that you need to really understand if a particular situation makes sense or doesn't. You know, and it just depends on who you are. Some people will need that from a mental health professional. Some people can get it through a coach. It just really depends on who you are. And so I want to go back to something that I said earlier, and I'm going to keep pounding this. You have to see yourself bigger than a student or a professional or an academic or whatever. That's not the point. The point is your life. The point is the purpose for your life, and the purpose that you feel like your life was put here for. That is the point. Being a student, getting the degree, getting a job, that's all part of it along the way. But what is your purpose? And when you think about your purpose, it helps you understand a little bit better when something isn't right. Is this getting me closer to my purpose, or is it pulling me further away from my purpose, is the question. And your purpose is not a degree.
Yeah, that's hard to hear sometimes.
Yeah. And you know what? Because the degree is the thing that we can fixate on. It's the thing we can focus our attention on. There are real outputs and outcomes from the degree itself. The degree is very, very important in opening doors. And also this. So one of the things I'm most appreciative about getting my PhD isn't just the knowledge, but it's a way of thinking. And that way of thinking opens doors for you and it creates opportunities for you. So again, that's a set of resources along the way that allow, you know, along this journey towards your purpose, which I think it's a continual journey from, you know, until you leave the earth physically. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a bigger purpose. And if you hold that bigger purpose in mind, it's easier to not take things personally.
Yeah.
Because you can see past what's happening to that purpose.
Yeah. This we're only 24 minutes in. The amount of keys that have been dropped already. We haven't even gotten to the part where you drop the keys.
Right.
I can only imagine what's going to happen when we get
there. All right, well, I'm getting fired up. I'm drinking my smart coffee right now.
Fired up, ready to go.
No, this is great. This is, I really enjoy talking about this. And I posted this morning on Facebook. And I'm Kimberly Douglas, D-O-U-G-L-A-S-S on Facebook, by the way. Mm-hmm. I posted this morning, within the past week, three people have talked about, and these are all PhDs, how either something I posted or something I've done with them has really shifted their outlook and encouraged them to work past their fears. And when I hear stuff like that, oh my goodness, it lets me know that I'm in the right place.
You're in the right place, yep.
Exactly. It absolutely lets me know. And I'm going to kind of take a side trip here. So one of the things, you know, with COVID, there's been a lot of devastation and just really just a lot of tragedy for people. So I will always want to start with that acknowledgement. But I also want to say that this is a golden opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's a golden opportunity to rethink what the hell we're doing here.
Yep.
So I'm a person who prides myself on being able to read the tea leaves. I think that higher education is going to be fundamentally different or structurally different in about a year or two. We're going to see just a greater division of the haves and have nots in terms of institutions.
Yeah.
And I think that people who get PhDs today have to think more like gig workers, not like adjuncts. Again, nothing wrong with being an adjunct, but not like you're piecing this together and piecing that together so that you have a decent paycheck, but really getting ahead of things to plan and say, this is my own enterprise and the institution is lucky to have me. That's a different conversation. The institution is lucky to be on my pathway to my purpose. Because they get the benefit of my skills and my expertise. And if you go into it with that perspective, as opposed to a deficit-based perspective of, oh, I hope I get hired, you know, 1,000 people apply for this job and there's only one position, maybe two positions, that's a whole different mindset. I don't know how I got off on that, but I had to stick that in there too.
No, we was on the side trip and that was
okay,
it.
Okay, yeah, so we're back now.
We're back. So I want to, so right before we get to the PhD tips, I'd like to try to ask a question, which I'm learning that this is a very dangerous question to ask PhDs, and it's about their dissertation, and trying to ask for an executive summary of what their dissertation was all about. I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to stop you. But if you could, what's your executive summary?
Sure. You're in luck because the work that I do now is so far removed from my dissertation.
Okay.
And while your dissertation is important in terms of content, it is extremely important, especially if you're going to go continue down that path.
Mm-hmm.
The value, one of the other values for me is the thought process behind the experience.
Yeah.
It teaches you a different way of thinking about the world. And that is why people, it's almost like a baptism, you know, the day that you defend and they sign off, there's like a light switch that comes on. And it's because A, you start to see yourself in a very different way, but B, you know that you can do work that holds up. So my dissertation was about the use of the term conflict diamonds. So my PhD is in political science, grad from University of Tennessee in 2009. And I was in international relations, comparative politics, and the executive summary of my dissertation is that what people call, what the media calls conflict diamonds is a misnomer for state failure. It's a shortcut, but it's also mislabeling state failure. So there's, so because if we're going to do conflict diamonds, then let's do conflict laptops and conflict cell phones and the pen that's in your cell phone and the rubber that's on your tires, right? Conflict diamonds, that's a sexy title. So people take a moral high ground. It's like, oh, you know, I only get non-conflict free diamonds. First of all, okay. Second of all, we still take a lot of raw materials from countries that we call third world nations. And it's on the backs situations where they're warlords and different factions. So instead of talking about state failure, we talk about that.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I suggest in my dissertation is, so this was 8 years after 9/11. And I talked about how countries like the Democratic Republic of the Congo would be great breeding ground for terrorist attacks. And, you know, because of the state, not because of the people, but because of the state failure, but not just state failure, but state failure that's being supported by the international community. Because that was my whole point, is that European powers pulled out of these countries politically, so to, in a way, but they still control the economy and they still manipulate the social scene by playing groups against each other. So that's the, that's what the conversation is really about.
Mm-hmm.
The diamonds is what we see, and it's the sexy thing, it's the glamorous thing. But let's talk about how the Hutus and the Tutsis, that animosity, that angst was stoked over years and years and years. Let's talk about that first.
Yeah.
So that's my executive summary.
No, that's it. That was dope. And I think and another reason why I think your story is important is because at least now, as I'm doing my PhD program, the centerpiece is your is the dissertation and the you know, surrounding staff and faculty really big up. You know, this is going to be your life's work. You have to stay with it, and if you don't, oh my God! And so, like, you totally are doing something different,
right?
And I think it's important for people to hear and to know that they can do that. So the next question, and this will allow that to be opened up, is what's your typical day like now as a person with a PhD in the world?
Okay, so a typical day is I get up, my brain starts working before my body does. I'm trying meditation. And the tapping helps me, you know, tapping in different regions of my body kind of that helps calm me down. So I get up.
I think I lost you.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I try to listen to my body in terms of whether I'm ready to get up or not if I don't have an appointment. But I try to schedule my appointments early so that it gets me moving. So I get up. I go to early appointments. I check back with clients that I'm already working with. And then I spend most of my day looking for new clients. And and so when I say looking, I'm not, it can't be where I'm on the hunt and just trying to sell people things. It really is about cultivating relationships. Yeah. Because a lot of what we do is in the social media space. Mm-hmm. And the way that space functions is by trust online.
Yeah.
And so there are certain things you have to do. And there are certain ways I have to make PhDs feel comfortable with working with me and talking to me and letting them know that, you know, I have the credentials because I do have the experience in administration and faculty and staff to work with them. And a lot of PhDs that I talk to haven't thought of themselves as managing their own enterprise, like managing, not necessarily that includes a business, but when I say your enterprise, I mean everything. I mean managing where you work, you know, how you use your skills. They really haven't been, because we weren't taught to think that way.
Yeah.
And so
slave to the academy.
Yes, right. It's and so and well, and one of the things I talk about is the dependence we have on the academy. And just because what happens is you get a salary that's probably not your not worthy of your skills. You get bills and stuff depending on that salary. And so then you come become locked in until you can get promoted, you get tenure, or you go make a lateral move somewhere else, or you jump up by going somewhere else. And there are so many ways that working there binds you. However, if that's what you want to do, then that's what you want to do. And that's just it. But you have to step back and look at the cycle of dependence that working for an institution creates. I just encourage people to do that. So part of my day is, the bulk of my day is putting those messages out there, giving people different ways to think about what it means to have a PhD, reminding them that they are superstars. Because they've been beat down, many of them have been beat down so much that they don't even see themselves as the superstars that they started out as PhD students. So I spend a lot of time relationship building. And sometimes that means I work later because people have jobs and they need to get things done in the middle of the day. I spend another part of my day just mapping, thinking about how to continue working with certain clients, especially when they hit a wall. Then there's something I need to do to really, so it's either some support, some information, or some accountability. Because sometimes I just need to call people on their stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. No, that's
okay.
That's it.
Okay.
That's it. Yeah, because I don't think I want to be heavily tethered to the academy when I graduate. And this is me talking as a first year, first semester PhD student.
Sure.
And because, you know, as we, you see it, you see it through other people's lives, and sometimes we're not the happiest. And I think in, you know, 2020, well, for what it's worth, like the age of entrepreneurship is here.
Yes.
And it's so exciting to share what you have to other people, with other people. So like what you're doing as your work, you're utilizing all the things that you learned from the academy and sharing with people how to, you know, be great at it.
Yeah, one of the things that being an administrator, it really taught me how to be a systems thinker. And there are people who work in academia and they are making a big difference, and they are killing it. And they do consulting on the, you know, as part of their enterprise. And so they're able to manage that. But that's not going to be the case for everybody. And I have one request of people who are listening to this. Please don't call any work you do outside the institution your side hustle. You have a PhD. You don't hustle. You have a business, or you have a consultancy, but you don't hustle, because that's a struggle mentality.
Yeah, I hate. I low-key hate that word.
Yeah, and with good reason, I think, or there are good reasons. I don't know what your reasons are, but yeah, there are good reasons.
Yeah, no, that's basically my reason. It's like, it's not, you know, you're putting your energy into it. It ain't side.
Yes.
It's like everything that you know is being put into that quote unquote side hustle. Yes. It's a main hustle to me, at least.
Yes. Yeah. And this is, no, that's you using your skills and your expertise as a professional.
Yeah. That's funny. Cool. So the grand finale, and I don't even know how many more tips you might have, because you just laid them on us.
Okay, so I have my tips, and they are some a reiteration of some things that I've said.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
So number one, keep your vision top of mind. Jobs are important. Appointments are important. Yes, they are. But think about the bigger vision that you have for yourself. What is this thing? What does this mean in total? So you're not just a student. You're not just a professional. You're not a full professor. You're more than all of the, because those are roles. What are you doing? And that's not something that other people can define in a job description. So that's, hold on. Tip number one. Number two, I challenge you to challenge this notion of imposter syndrome. I can't speak for everybody, but I'll say this in people that I've talked to and just thinking about my own experience. It's not necessarily that you don't think you belong there. It's that sometimes you have a recognition of what's really going on there. And you may not like it, or you may not want to make some decisions that you hard decisions that you have to make. But I challenge you to think more about the environment before you decide that you have imposter syndrome. Number three, your self-worth should not be tied to grades and other affirmation. And I challenge you to think about why you're getting a PhD, what it means. Is it performative? Is it performance? What does it mean to achieve? Who is it for? Are you trying to show someone something? You need to examine all those things. Because let me tell you, there was a lot of stuff that I thought I had worked past. And when I started my business, oh my God. You talk about something that will challenge your notion of self-worth. And do I deserve to have this contract? Okay, I've done all this. I've set it up so that I can execute this and execute that. But do I really expect people to use my services? And so those kinds of questions will creep in and actually, you know, get you to pushing things away. Because when you run a business, things are not structured for you like they are in an institution. And that's what you lose. I don't know if you say you lose, but that's what you lack when you go into business for yourself. You don't have that infrastructure to prop you up and to support you. And that is a good thing. So you really have to think about your own capabilities and your own capacity. And so it really makes you examine yourself at a very deep level. But whether you're working for an institution or an agency organization, or whether you're working by yourself, you really have to address self-worth issues, because you're going to keep getting the same lesson over and over again until you get it. And as the great philosopher Erica Badu would say, You're going to keep getting the story until you get the lesson.
Yeah.
Something to that effect. She said at a concert, but you know, who knows? It's something to that effect that, and, or as Oprah says, you know, first it comes as a whisper. Hold on. Make sure I didn't lose you. First it comes, as Oprah said, first it comes as a whisper, and then it gets louder and louder and louder and louder. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole other conversation we could have here about scale. And what having a PhD does is it allows you to scale up. That means the insecurities you have and the doubts that you have about yourself, they're going to scale up as well. So keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. Number four, you are far more capable than you've ever been encouraged to believe. Like, we use only part of our capacity to compute, to think, to function. If you start from that perspective, as opposed to a deficit-based perspective, it gives you a whole different outlook. When things happen that don't go your way, or you make what some people would consider to be mistakes, then it's okay, because you trust that you ultimately have the capability to work through this. So, number five, the PhD will not solve lack of self-worth. And related to that, achievement is not the same thing as healing. And made me think about a colleague that I had. And this colleague, no matter where they go, I'm trying not to assign a gender, no matter where they go, they're going to be into it with somebody. Yes, there's injustice, a lot of injustice in this country and within institutions, but that's not the point here. This person sees a fight around every single corner. And whether that's somebody within a similar group, it doesn't matter, because their anxiety is just off the chain. Oh, and having a conversation with this person about, there's a whole set of studies called the Adverse Childhood Experience Studies. And we were talking about it in terms of a paper that we were writing. And this person said, I'm so glad, you know, he, she, they said my brain. Something to the effect of how getting the PhD has allowed us to work past these adverse childhood experiences and the impact of the adverse childhood experience. And I had to catch myself because there's a lot of confusion swirling around this people or around this person. And look, I'm trying to keep my pronouns straight. And I'm just talking about one person. There's a lot of just confusion swirling around this person. And it really hit me in that moment that sometimes we think, and when I say we, I mean I, sometimes we think the education is the healing. Now, the education has provided me the means for healing, and in some cases has contributed to the healing. But the education is not the healing. The education is the education. It's a healing in that it provided me a different way to think about life and to reframe it. But it's not the healing itself. And so you can really ignore a lot of things that need to be addressed. If you're winning grants, if you're getting appointments, if you're getting this chair and that chair, or you're recognized at this conference and that conference, you can really start to think that you are a healed person. But those two things are different things. And particularly people, and I'll say, because I'm a Black person, in my experience as a Black American, there's a lot of trauma. And a lot of trauma from our families, a lot of trauma associated with school in particular. And so we have to address that. We have to seek help to address that, because the achievement just It's wallpaper. And whatever's happening behind that wall is not going to magically go away.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this to say, you know, I don't want to end with doom and gloom, but I'm saying this to say, you have only reached a small portion of your capacity. Give yourself the opportunity by getting the healing you need. Give yourself the opportunity to be as great as you've ever imagined you could be.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Kimberly Douglas, please give us how we can reach you. Give us how we can reach you, where we can reach you, so that we all, even outside of PhDs, can get a little bit of your services so that we can be better.
I am happy to give you my contact information. So let me start with socials. So I'm on Facebook and it's KimberlyDouglass. So you can find me there. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm not there as much as I am on other platforms, but it's Kimberly Douglas PhD on LinkedIn. I'm also on the gram and as Dr. Kimberly Douglas, DrKimberly Douglas. I have to think about my last name, Douglass. This is all one word. And then I'm on Twitter is Kimberly at Scholar Valet, and valet meaning doing services. But anyway, so it's something I was experimenting with when I did my Twitter account. I don't use Twitter that much. Okay. But my new jam is TikTok. So let me tell you.
I need to get on TikTok. Something's happening there.
Let me tell you. So what I've been experimenting with is microlearning and teaching in small chunks and using that as a medium to teach things in a way that's not so heavy. So when I say that I've had to explore a different side of myself and I've had to let go of some fears to get on there, oh my goodness, self-development. It's and I'm almost 50 years old. It doesn't stop and it shouldn't stop. But TikTok, Dr. Kimberly Douglas, same as I am on Instagram. And in my coaching, I want to coach people on how to use social media to elevate your personal platform. How to use it. You know, there's one way that is suggested that you use it, but how do we take it to the next level? So then there's my email address. I have a business address, but I don't. Just use my Gmail. It's Douglas, Douglass, Kimberly, Kimberly, Lynn, Lynn. And it's all run together, Douglas, Kimberly, Lynn at gmail.com. And that's it. That's how you reach me.
Cool. And before the whole world hits you up, just let us know before we all are. We just need to know what your capacity is. How many of us can you, you know, support at any given time so that we know if we if you're not to us, we know why.
So let me tell you one of the things I had to step back and reassess what I offer. And to make my services more affordable to people who are students or people who are already PhDs who are not making the salary they would desire to make. I have a monthly membership. And what that does is it allows me to pool resources among people. And it also allows me to meet with people in shorter increments of time. Most people who are students or who are PhDs, they don't need an hour every week. They may need a 15-minute, 30-minute tune-up to be able to come in and run a few things by me. And in that case, my membership would be really good for people, for just to have that check-in, just to have that compass. But if people need something more intensive, I can accept fewer of those people. But for the membership, I can get multiple people in. Because what I and you asked me about my day, part of my day is making sure that my members are taken care of. So y'all come.
Let's
everybody
go.
Everybody will be listened to, and if I can't help you, I'll say I can't help you. I'm sorry. If I can't help you, I'll say I can't help you, and I've done that before. because there's some things that are just beyond my capacity. But let's talk. Let's figure out if there's room. Like I said, with the membership, I can get multiple people in and get you set up so that we're talking to each other on a regular basis, even if it's for a short period of time.
Cool. All right. That's Dr. Kimberly Douglas with the Major Keys. Yes. So thank you for coming.
Yes. Come on.
Thank you for tuning in. Check back sometime soon for more PhD tips. Until next time, peace.